only a hint of religion. I had a chance to listen to John and some of the regulars at the mission talk about their experiences. Here's a brief excerpt.
There would be a lot of similarities between Manitoba and Saskatchewan, but once you stand us apart from the rest of the country, the two key things would be the Aboriginal component to Winnipeg. It's estimated that 85% of the homeless in Winnipeg are Aboriginal peoples, and definitely the severe cold weather. I think we're probably the coldest major city in Canada.
Well, I was born in Norway House. I was adopted out, and let's just say it made my life interesting. During that winter, it was one of the coldest ones I've experienced, you know, where I found myself no place to go, not even a place to stay, because I had no money. None of these places now, you can go and sleep for free, you know, and they weren't there before, you know. Yes, and now it's such a problem now that they have to. It's almost like a necessity, you know.
It's my opinion that most of the people that are down here at some point in their lives were either abused physically, sexually, emotionally, relationally, and or have suffered some great loss. We have people here that are mentally ill, that when we deinstitutionalized the mentally ill and we said they don't need to be in institutions, we can just turn them loose on the street and they can live normal lives. Well, we've got people here that don't have a support system.
Alcohol problems, drug problems, spend all their checks, then they come here and eat after for the rest of the month.
I'm living in one of the hotels on the street or on a strip, so I'm familiar with most of these people since they drop in quite often when they're kings for a day.
And, when they're kings for a day.
When the welfare comes out, that's when they're kings for a day. And then it's back to pauper again, or prince and the pauper, whatever.
Like redistribution of wealth.
Not really.
Social revolution, yes.
A lot of people don't even have the volition to get off their derrieres and do anything. So there's nothing you can really do but make sure that they live and survive through it.
If I was going to be honest, I don't know if it's going to get better. As a matter of fact, I think it's going to get worse. In the last 10 years, there has been 10 SROs, or single room occupancy hotels, that's like one room, one person, that have closed. And they're getting older and more run down, more expensive to fix up. They're going to be closed one by one, and the problem's going to grow. I wish I could say something more positive about that.
Come down, you know, take a look. You know, you don't know until you come down here and say for yourself and see with your own eyes that it's there, you know. It's easy to say that in Parliament or behind a plush seat, that sort of thing. It's easy to say that. But, you know, and when the cameras are off, they go home to their nice house, you know, then what? Those people are still going to be underneath the grates, underneath the stairs, that sort of thing. It's still going to be there. So that's what I mean. They have to do something now. If they don't do it now, it's going to be worse down the road.
I have directly written and emailed to several MLAs that I haven't even been acknowledged that are in the sitting government. They may be seeking out information from someone, but when we're looking after 300 to 400 people a day, I don't think we should be ignored.
With a history of social policies that removed children from their families, with an absence of treatment centers for the mentally ill, and widespread addictions to substances and gambling that pour money into government coffers, it's no surprise that the government doesn't show up here. For the Homelessness Marathon out of Winnipeg and CJUM at the University of Manitoba, this is Liz Clayton reporting.
Hour number 6 of the CK or the Canada-wide Homelessness Marathon. In this hour, we will be discussing social myths and rights as they pertain to homelessness. We'll be looking at government policies that create homelessness, and we'll be discussing with lawyers, anti-poverty groups, and homeless coalitions. We'll be asking the question, is housing a human right? The United Nations thinks it is, but our government is doing its part to ensure that all we one moment. is our government doing its part to ensure that we all have access to safe, affordable housing? How do preconceptions about the poor affect public policy on housing? What solutions exist that are not being implemented? Find out on Hour 6, Social Rights and Myths.
Bienvenue à l'heure 6 du Marathon des sans-abri à Montréal, Québec, sur CKUT et avec le Café sur la rue et l'itinéraire. L'heure 6, on va demander, est-ce que le logement est un droit? Les Nations Unies le croient, mais est-ce que notre gouvernement fait ses propres efforts pour assurer que nous avons tous le même accès au logement sécur et affordable? Comment est-ce que la perception publique des pauvres affecte la loi envers les sans-abri? Quels soutiens existent qui ne sont pas implémentés? On y discute en profondeur durant l'heure 6 du Marathon des sans-abri, droits sociaux et mythes. Avec nous à Montréal ce soir, on a Richard Miron de l'Association pour la défense des droits sociaux. C'est un organisme d'action directe en défense des droits des pauvres, offrant services, aide sociale et logement. Bonjour Richard.
Bonsoir.
Et aussi, on a Jean-Claude Laporte du comité BAE, c'est la comité de base pour l'action et l'information sur le logement social de Hochelaga-Maisonneuve à Montréal. Bonjour Jean-Claude.
Bonsoir.
And also on the line, we have Penny and Lyle from Kingston, I believe. Hello.
Hello.
And could you...
Hello.
Hi there, welcome to the show. Could you tell us the name of your organization?
Sure, this is Penny speaking. Penny Rubinsky. I'm with the West Kootenai Women's Association in Nelson, British Columbia.
Welcome.
Welcome, Penny.
And also we have Lyle on the line? No? Okay, we're
just... Yeah, I'm with Room of One Tone in Kingston.
Welcome to the show.
Okay, just so we can explain... A Room of One's Own is a collective organization from Kingston, Ontario, and they are joining us from the community station in Kingston as a collective. So, je voulais juste dire que A Room of One's Own, c'est un groupe collectif qui vient de Kingston comme groupe ici. Alors, on va commencer avec la première question, très simple mais très importante. Est-ce que le logement est un droit? Is housing a human right? So why don't we start with Penny Rivinsky, way out west.
Way out west. Well, I believe it's a human right. Canada believed it was a human right when they signed the UN Declaration. I think people in Canada like to believe it's a human right, but our actions would not support that belief.
And how do things look in Kingston on this question?
Do we have Kingston on the air?
There's so many people... Yeah, we're on the air. There's so many people that just don't have a place to go or spend their time where there's so many so empty buildings that these people have to really struggle and go and sneak into these places to get some sleep at night where it's warm.
Okay. And, alors, Richard, Jean-Claude, est-ce que le logement est un droit?
Si je peux me permettre, ça devrait être un droit. En fait, ça devrait être un droit social, mais je pense pas que ce soit reconnu comme tel.
Oui. Ça devrait être un droit, mais je pense pas que ce soit reconnu comme un droit tel quel. Le logement étant quelque chose de nécessaire, un élément de base à la vie, tant et aussi longtemps qu'il sera soumis aux lois du marché, on ne pourra pas le considérer comme un droit réel, même si à un moment donné, on l'inscrit dans la Charte des droits et libertés telle qui est proposée par le gouvernement Charest, qui voudrait l'enchasser dans la Charte des droits. Tant et aussi longtemps que le logement sera soumis aux lois du marché, on ne pourra pas le considérer comme un droit plein et entier.
OK. Just before we go to Jean-Claude, I'm going to quickly translate that. Basically, what Richard is saying is that housing is a human right, of course. However, in the context of our society, that it becomes subordinate to the law of the market. And obviously, that creates some very serious complications.
Ben,
pour moi, je considère qu'un droit, ça s'obtient dans la lutte. Puis on peut avoir des droits sur papier. C'est effectivement peut-être le cas, là, si tu es enchâssé dans la Charte des Nations Unies. Sauf que si on se bat pas pour l'avoir, ben on ne l'obtiendra jamais. Puis il faut le réaliser là, par des actions directes, puis pas juste par du lobbying avec les gouvernements.
Okay, I'll translate that. Thank you, Richard. Richard is saying that we can have rights on paper, essentially, but unless they are followed up by actions, then they don't count for much. So what's required is action to enforce those rights.
Okay, and a second part of this question, obviously, is if housing is a human right, do the laws in Canada reflect this? Penny, can you let us know what you think?
Well, and Penny, we need you to speak up nice and loud, please. Thank you.
I don't know what you're hearing out east about what's going on in British Columbia with this Liberal government. Welfare is being cut, daycare is being cut, any kind of... all the money to people who don't already have it is basically being cut. Municipally, we are not... we have no housing first policy. We have no policy about retrofitting older houses. We have no policies about replacing demolished buildings with numbers of low-income housing, nor do we have any policy about developing community rather than just the housing market. So out here, no, it's not working. I know the federal government is throwing some money at homelessness and at poverty, but it's simply not enough. And without the educational components behind it, it goes nowhere.
So, do you see this right to housing as a component of a more holistic sort of thing?
Well, I believe I can't remember who it was who was saying. I think both the Francophone gentlemen were saying that it's about action, and it's absolutely mm-hmm. about action. We all have a right to these things in the world, but we're going to have to take them because they're not given freely. We've created a society and a culture that likes to believe it's free and likes to believe the people within it have equal opportunity, but it's simply not the case.
Okay. So to our coalition in Kingston, do you feel that in Ontario the laws are reflecting this human right?
Well, I think so, definitely, because the people have to get into the empty buildings, and the government's avoiding that completely. There is no money supplied to that'll work it between landlords and tenants to get the homeless into these buildings.
Okay, Peter.
All right. We're going to move along then to our next question. I'm going to... ask a question about the types of laws that exist out there. Although there were legal rights enshrined in the Human Rights Charter and inside the Canadian housing and mortgage laws, there's also the question of laws that are passed against the homeless, such as panhandling laws and so on. So I'd like to get you guys to comment on these laws that are passed against the homeless. J'aimerais vous demander de parler sur les lois qui sont passées contre les sans-abri, comme les lois qui sont passées contre les squeegees. Alors, je vais commencer avec toi, Jean-Claude.
Et là là!
Et Richard, si vous voulez parler aussi, c'est bien.
Les lois qui sont passées contre les sans-abri?
Oui, bien, contre... supposément, nous avons un système qui... supporte les droits des sans-abri, des pauvres et tout ça. Mais qu'est-ce qu'on voit dans la vérité? C'est les lois qui sont passées pour les arrêter de demander pour l'argent, pour les arrêter de trouver une place pour rester, des choses comme ça.
OK. Je suis un peu moins ferré dans la matière. Je le sais que dans les dernières années, principalement au niveau municipal, il y a eu une répression accrue au niveau de la mendicité. C'est-à-dire les gens qui quittent dans la rue, l'application des lois existantes ont été resserrées et l'application par la police a été faite de façon un peu plus restrictive. Mais je ne pourrais pas en rajouter plus parce que c'est pas vraiment mon domaine.
OK, c'est bon. Richard, voulez-vous ajouter quelque chose?
C'est clair que les lois ne sont pas faites pour les plus pauvres. Quand on voit... en tout cas, il faudrait qu'ils construisent pas mal plus de logements sociaux. Puis là, ils n'en bâtissent pas actuellement.
Ouais.
Parce qu'à un moment donné, moi, comme intervenant dans un groupe de défense des personnes à cité sociale, ben on voit, il y a bien des gens, des fois, que ils ont le loyer qui paye, il est supérieur à la prestation d'aide sociale. Fait que c'est clair que les lois ne sont pas faites pour les pauvres. Puis c'est pour ça qu'il y a bien du monde qui choisissent à un moment donné, au lieu d'avoir un plus gros loyer que le prestation, ils décident d'aller dans la rue. Bon, puis à Montréal, bon, le prix de loyer est en train d'augmenter de plus en plus. Puis c'est clair que plus ça va aller, plus qu'il va y avoir du monde dans la rue, puis plus que... Il va y avoir de la répression parce que le gouvernement, il veut cacher ça. Il veut montrer une belle vitrine là, pour Montréal. Il veut pas... c'est important, le tourisme à Montréal. Là.
Ouais.
Fait que les lois, elles sont vraiment pas faites pour les pauvres.
OK, well, Richard is saying very strongly that, there may be some... there are no laws really that are supporting the poor currently. And the government here in Montreal is more interested in sponsoring tourism. And making things look good. So how are things out there for you in Penny, in BC, in terms of...
It's absolutely the same way. You know, there was a house, an empty house, taken by some younger people in the spring. There was a core group of 10 people, and they, in fact, did not call it a squat. They called it home, and they were adamant in the media that it was home. The building belonged to the regional district. We have four levels of government here. And they were evicted early one morning, as is not unusually, and the house was torn down in a matter of hours. And the law supported that. The law supported putting these folks back on the street and tearing down an empty house that was quite livable, rather than having people under shelter. The law does not support us. The law does not support poor people. The law in this country does not support most people. Unless you're middle class, pretty well, unless you're white, you're not supported. You know, we pay lip service to this cultural mosaic, and it does not exist. And it certainly doesn't exist for that piece of the mosaic that includes homeless and poor people.
Okay, thank you, Penny. I'm just going to take this opportunity to let our listeners know about our toll-free number. You can call 1-866-763-4136. C'est notre numéro sans frais que vous pouvez appeler au 1-866-763-4136. Si vous avez des questions pour ceux qui parlent cette heure, if you have any questions to ask our panelists this hour, please give us a call. Now we're going to go to a room of one's own in Kingston. And our panelists there were discussing a bit earlier about squatting rights of people in Kingston, and Penny was touching on that. I was wondering if the people from Kingston could maybe comment on that in terms of the legal context of squatting.
Well, in Kingston, the law doesn't appreciate it if we go into buildings that are empty because... And yet, we do need those places to go and exist. But if we're panhandling out on the street, there's only the odd person that will object to that.
Okay.
But if we go into an empty building, like an empty home, wouldn't like that at all. They'd take us out of there immediately. I guarantee it.
Have you guys tried doing that in Kingston?
There has been some that have gone into empty buildings, yes, for the need of a place to be, and they've had to simply exist there. Yet if the police find out they're there, they will be taken out, I guarantee it.
Okay. Alors, je crois ce qu'on parle vraiment, c'est que parce que les sans-abri et ceux qui sont à risque ne sont pas dans un système social. Les lois n'existent pas vraiment pour les défendre à cause qu'ils sont en dehors de ce système. Pour nos panélistes ici, Jean-Claude et Richard, est-ce que vous pouvez peut-être décrire cette zone grise entre la perception publique des sans-abri et la réalité?
Mais concernant les sans-abri, je pense qu'il y a une double perception. Il y a une perception que je qualifierais de chrétienne. C'est-à-dire qu'à certains moments de l'année, comme à Noël, ou quand il fait moins 40 dehors, alors là, on va avoir une perception charitable, de pitié vis-à-vis les gens qui couchent dehors, et qu'on devrait donc s'en occuper, et que les gouvernements devraient faire quelque chose. Mais quand on se promène sur la rue, et puis que là, il y a un sans-abri qui nous tend la main, ou qu'on voit un sans-abri dormir dans la bouche d'un métro, alors là, les gens se sentent dérangés, et là, la perception n'est plus chrétienne du tout, mais c'est plutôt comme... Qu'est-ce qu'ils foutent là? On ne devrait pas les laisser traîner dans la rue. Ramassons-les, ça nous dérange. Alors, je pense qu'il y a une double perception à ce niveau-là. À un autre niveau, où les gens sont susceptibles de devenir sans-abri, alors là, on pense tout aux gens qui sont mal logés, c'est-à-dire, comme Richard l'a fait mention tantôt, les gens qui payent trop cher selon leurs revenus pour se loger, ou les gens qui sont dans une situation de sans-logis, comme on l'a connu les trois dernières années aux alentours, principalement du 1er juillet, ces personnes-là sont susceptibles de devenir des sans-abri. Alors là, la perception du public est plus difficile à cerner, mais je pense que de façon générale, la perception n'est pas si mauvaise que ça, sauf que quand le gouvernement vient pour poser des gestes pour aider les sans-logis, suite évidemment des pressions de groupes sociaux et non pas par générosité et de bon cœur, là, évidemment, il peut y avoir une double perception. C'est oui, on doit les aider parce qu'il ne faut pas qu'ils se retrouvent à la rue, mais en même temps, c'est ces gens-là là, qui se trouvent donc du travail et comme ça, ils ne nous emmerderont pas et vont être capables de se payer un logement. Alors, tu as toujours cette double pensée-là qui circule à travers ce qu'on peut qualifier d'opinion publique. C'est toujours une perception un peu schizophrène, l'opinion publique.
OK.
Would you like me to translate that before we go any further?
Go for it.
Okay, I was taking some notes down there. So Jean-Claude was talking about the double standards that exist in public perception towards the homeless and towards people who have inadequate housing. So when it comes to the homeless, there's often a Christian attitude, an attitude chrétien, that he described. So around Christmas or when it's very cold, mm-hmm. people feel generous and will hand out money. But then also a lot of times, maybe during the rest of the year, people are much more hostile and don't want to deal with a homeless problem, want the police to move them on and so on. So that's for people who are actually homeless. And then for people who are poorly lodged, there's a fairly benevolent point of view. People in general want them to be housed, but there's also a sort of an undertone of hostility there as well, where people blame them and feel that they should find work and those kinds of ideas.
Cool. Richard, would you like to comment on this double standard? How do you see that?
Par rapport... la question, c'est... souvent, quand on perçoit les sans-abri, on dit qu'ils vont être toujours sans-abri. C'est du monde qui prend... C'est des robineux qui prennent de l'alcool, qui sont drogués, puis qu'ils vont être toujours dans la rue. Mais souvent, en tout cas, moi, j'aime mieux l'expression « sans domicile fixe ». Qui veut dire, t'es peut-être pas attaché à un logement pour toujours pendant une année ou pendant une certaine période. Donc, t'es pris pour te déplacer constamment. Mais ça aussi, c'est pourquoi les gens sont pris pour se déplacer constamment. Puis ça, je vais revenir un peu sur ce que je dis. C'est parce qu'il y a un manque de revenus, un manque d'argent. C'est vraiment ça. Parce que ici, quand il fait des moins 20 et des moins 40, c'est clair que les gens ils vont se trouver des abris. Mais sauf que c'est jamais permanent. Puis là, quand ça devient bien inquiétant pour la population, c'est quand il commence à avoir du monde qui travaille, mettons, 30-35 heures, puis là, ils sont pas capables de se trouver des habitations permanentes, comme ça se fait à Toronto. Comme ça commence à se faire à Montréal, là, ça devient inquiétant. Parce que là, ils s'identifient un peu à ces gens-là, la population. Mais quand c'est juste des sans-abri qui supposément seraient des robineux, des drogués ou whatever, qui ressemblent pas trop à la commune, aux gens ordinaires, là, ben là, c'est pas pareil. C'est pas pareil. Tu sais, était, en tout cas, moi, je pense qu'il y a... Puis là, ça amène là, ce que Jean-Claude a dit. Là, il y a un double standard. C'est toutes les histoires de chrétiennerie, là, puis des niaiseries de même, puis...
I'm going to translate that again, or as well. Richard says that, in general, the attitudes are much more hostile to people who are perceived as having alcohol problems or drug problems. And he likes the idea as well that people who are homeless or whatever should be known as people who don't have permanent homes. And, no, do you want to jump...
Ben, sans domicile fixe.
Sans domicile fixe. No permanent home.
No fixed address.
No fixed address.
Yeah,
right. And that, so people have sympathy for them once again when it's cold and so on, but then the rest of the year that sympathy sort of evaporates. But he does note that the problem is growing and that there's a whole issue of the working poor, and there's a lot more sympathy for people who are working 35 hours a week or whatever, and especially in larger cities like Toronto. And those people can't afford to pay rent, even though they are working full time. So that's sort of a different type of homelessness, and maybe there's a little more sympathy for that, but we're not seeing much action.
Okay. I have a question for Penny Ruvinsky out in Nelson. Are you still there, Penny?
I'm here.
Lovely. Now, Nelson not being a really concentrated urban center, I'm wondering whether the situation in terms of a public perception or perception of people who are more established in that area, whether you feel that it's similar to what our panelists here are expressing, or is there something different that you see?
I think Nelson is about a town of about 10,000 people, and including the outlying area, which serves about 25,000. So yes, it's a much smaller place than inner Toronto or Montreal. I think the difference is that the community is very entrenched in being an artistic community. And so a lot of lip service is paid to ideas of social justice that may or may not really exist in people's minds, or rather in their hearts, because that's where those things need to exist before anything will happen.
Right.
If it doesn't exist in our hearts, we're not going to take any action to change anything. But yes, the same sort of things are here. People are afraid that as more and more people move in who have no fixed address, that crime will go up. People believe crime has gone up in this community. In fact, statistics show that crime has in fact gone down, as I think it has in most places in Canada.
I think what
we're dealing with is an underdeveloped world within our developed world, and we don't want to see it. And we make all kinds of ways in our heads that we refuse to see it. And I myself have to wonder how many times have I walked by somebody on the street and not seen them? How many people have I walked by who have been invisible to me, you know, and I'm sensitive to the issue.
So to an extent, there's a willful blindness about those who aren't able to, to support themselves.
Yeah.
Je vais faire une traduction maintenant. C'est Penny qui parle de Colombie-Britannique. Et puis elle vient de Nelson, BC, qui est un petit ville. Il y a environ 10 000 personnes là, peut-être 25 000 dans la région. Puis elle dit qu'il y a beaucoup des mêmes doubles standards que de laquelle vous parlez. Et que les gens là sont très épeurés du crime. Même en instead of... Les crimes vont les taux
diminuer.
Des crimes abaissent. Alors c'est pas une réalité même, mais c'est un point de vue qui domine cette question. Puis elle dit que les gens doivent être plus sensibles à cette question. Puis elle se demande elle-même, même si elle est assez sensible à cette question.
Okay. Just before we go on, I'm going to make sure that our friends from Kingston are still on the air.
Could you translate? Was that Jean-Claude?
Mm-hmm. We're still here.
Okay. I'm sorry. Did you need a translation?
I did, yes.
From what Jean-Claude was saying?
Yes, please.
Was that you, Peter?
Yeah, I was just translating, Penny, what you were saying.
Oh.
Oh, from people.
So don't worry. I was just letting all the French listeners know how you were describing the situation out in Nelson, and I was just letting them know in French what you were saying.